For Discovery News, I'm Will Johnson. Welcome to the Friday News Feedbag, a little thing we do every Friday here on Discovery News. I'm joined by Discovery News reporters James Williams and Jorge Rivas. Welcome, James and Jorge.
Thank you.
Jorge. Hi, Will.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Yeah, great.
You guys are in the news bunker.
We are
hunkered in the bunker.
You guys haven't really been on the road that much as you have in past weeks.
I will be on the road next week.
Where are you heading?
San Diego.
What's going on?
A bunch of stories.
Secret?
Not really.
Okay, well, we'll talk about it later.
All right.
When you come back.
Yeah.
All right, well, as always, we'll tell our new subscribers, of hopefully we have many of them. Here's what we do every Friday on Discovery News. James and Jorge each bring us their three favorite stories of the week. They have to do with science, technology, health, Discovery News type stories. And then you as our listener gets to choose your favorite story of the week, and then the points go to either James or Jorge for bringing us those stories. Did I say that right?
Yep. Yeah.
All right. I've done it. What is it, like 30 times now?
Almost.
26.
Yeah, yeah.
Half a year, right?
I should be able to explain it.
It's our six-month anniversary.
Yeah. Let's remember the one-year anniversary when that rolls around. All right, so again, these guys are just bringing us some fun stories, and then our listeners get to tell us which ones they liked and why they liked them. Be sure to do that. We get a lot of emails with people saying, I vote for this, but they don't say why, so... And at the end of the podcast, I'll tell you how to actually vote for your favorite story. All right, so before we jump into this week's stories, of course, we want to bring you the results of last week. The score is currently tied up 13-all, James and Jorge, in a really heated race here.
Yeah.
Yeah, the word I would describe is deathmatch.
Deathmatch, dogfight.
It's like a race to infinity, though. There's no end.
No, there is
no end. It's like every week. As always, a lot of great emails. People liked a wide variety of the stories. Obviously, each week there are six stories, three from each of you. And we got a few votes for the bus story that had to do with scheduling bus routes and how to make it work the best. Was that your story, James?
No.
That was Jorge.
Yep.
All right. Well, this isn't necessarily the winner. I'm going to go through a few of these. Daniel wrote in, I lived in Chicago for 5 years and had plenty of experience.
Oh, wait, that was mine.
Okay. All right. Yeah. There were two sort of delivery stories last week. This had to do with bus schedules.
Okay.
Daniel wrote in, I lived in Chicago for 5 years, had plenty of experiences with horrible bus bunching. The worst was the day I watched five number eights go cruising by just before I got to the stop and then had to wait for almost an hour for the next one.
Wow.
Sounds like a terrible day.
I remember that same problem when I lived in Chicago.
Oh, really?
Bus bunching.
With the number eight? Did people call it bus bunching, or is that just his?
No, I never remember. I use a series of expletives to describe it, but bus bunching sounds like a better way to describe it.
That can't be said here on this podcast today. All right, then Amy wrote in about the daylight saving time story, where basically it really messes us up.
That was Jorge's story.
Wasn't that right, Jorge? All right, another one of Jorge's. Sorry, James. But actually, well, hold on. She says, I was all set to vote for the time zone, Zori, because the time changes during the year really mess me up. I notice changes in my meal times, and I have lots of sleep problems whenever we change the clocks. I think we can all relate to that, right?
Yep.
All right, but she continues, fortunately for James, I was then captivated by the puppy parade death distraction story, and I want to vote for that. Keep up the good work.
Nice. So, it was like a fake out.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. All right, so a vote there for James and that interesting story, and there were other votes for that. So I'm going to reveal the winner shortly, but another listener, actually, we spoke to on the phone. His name is Andy, and he is a logistics expert of some type. Here he is. All right, Andy, so tell me, first of all, what your vote for the week was.
My vote for the week was Jorge's story on computers solving the problem of making deliveries and the vehicle routing problem, as they called it, or traveling salesman problem.
All right, Andy, and you emailed us that you're actually a logistics professional. Tell us what that means and how this sort of research could affect what you do.
Well, I am a logistics coordinator, and what I do is I plan routes for delivery trucks that deliver the products that my company makes to our customers at their distribution centers all over the United States.
Well, then, you know, I think logistics are actually quite interesting. I don't know that much about it, but how did you get into the line of work?
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. I didn't go to school for it. I just got a general business degree, but I was working at a department store, and this gentleman came in to buy a pair of pants from me. And he turned out to be the boss of my best friend, who had been doing an internship at this logistics company. And I talked to him for a few minutes, and the next time I saw him, he offered me a job.
So from a pair of pants to logistics?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Andy, we appreciate your listening to the feedback, and thanks a lot for your vote and talking to us.
Oh, hey, I enjoy it every week. I hope you guys keep up the good work.
Cool. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks again, bye-bye. All right, so there's Andy with his vote for Jorge's story about delivery routes. Interesting guy, huh?
Yeah.
You know what's interesting, I think, is that both of the career leap that he made both have to do with walking.
That's good.
Because you need pants to walk.
Not necessarily.
Well, legally.
Yeah.
Outside.
Outside.
And yeah. Logistics requires walking.
We need more logistics expert, I think, in the world.
To avoid bus bunching.
Yeah, just to get everything running as smooth as possible, I think.
That's right.
So we're like 20 minutes in, Will.
Yeah, sorry. We've wasted a lot of time. All right, so I will reveal the winner of last week's feedback. And actually, the puppy parade thing got to a lot of people. So James' story about basically our minds sort of trick us into being happy because death is at the end, but we don't have to worry about it because we think of nice things like puppies, right?
Yep.
All right. I don't know if that's a good description of it.
No, I think that's the gist of it.
A lot of people really were amused by or liked the idea of the puppy parade.
Yeah. Can I just say this one thing, speaking of puppies?
Yeah.
I don't know how many people know this, but Jorge was the ref in the puppy bowl last year.
Ouch.
In the puppy bowl?
Yeah. You don't know what he looks like, and you happen to record last year's puppy bowl, Jorge.
Well, make sure our listeners know this is the Animal Planet's puppy bowl during the Super Bowl when it's on, right? Animal Planet has their puppy bowl, which is a lot of fun to watch. So that's great. I didn't know that, actually. Mm-hmm. Will you be the ref this year?
No.
No.
I was. I think they replaced me for a younger ref.
He was cheating. He threw the puppy ball.
I threw the game.
How was it?
A whole big scandal. I don't really want to talk about it.
What was the really? Was
the the boxer was involved and the bulldog. And
it was a negative experience for you?
No, it was great.
All right.
It was fantastic.
All right. Well, without further ado, first of all, congratulations to James for his story.
Thank you so much.
14-13 now, James leading Jorge in the Friday News feedback. Let's get into this week's stories. Jorge, you want to start it off?
Okay.
Okay.
My first story comes out of Northwestern University, where scientists are mapping parts of lethal bacteria like cholera, West Nile, viral encephalitis, and Ebola, and they're coming up with a 3D portrait of these diseases. And what they're doing is they're exposing, different kinds of views to the very atoms and the proteins that make up these bacteria. And before, this was a time-consuming, lengthy process, and researchers and pharmacologists who were coming up for, designs for new drugs to combat these diseases were coming up with, many sterile images of these diseases, of the proteins that make them up. And this new system would map it a lot quicker and would, give these researchers a three-dimensional view of these diseases. And it's part of a $31 million contract by the NIH and a really ambitious plan to come up with, over the next 5 years, to come up with maps to all these different diseases. Right now they're looking at a rogues gallery. They call it a rogues gallery of 375 different proteins from these diseases. And, bacteria are made up of thousands of different proteins, and when you could only do one image at a time, it was a lot slower. Now you could, they're going through the genome and mapping, hundreds of proteins from these bacteria. And
what do they do with them once they get them mapped out?
Well, once they get them mapped out, they put them on, they're putting them on a website, which is also really interesting. It's, and I don't know, I could list the website here, but it's for scientists who are specializing in these different bacteria. And once, once it goes online, these scientists can actually, look at, through like a three-dimensional view of let's say the Ebola virus, and look at it online and come up with what kinds of drugs they think would be most effective for that disease.
It's kind of like when Luke Skywalker got the Death Star plans and they were able to find the secret way in. Right? I mean, that's kind of what it is, right?
Yeah, well, you mean like that, the old like view of it on the screen where they it's kind of like...
Like if once they have the three-dimensional thing of it, then they could better attack it.
Right. I mean, when you look at a bacteria, I think, and you have all these proteins that make it up, when you know more about the proteins that make it up and look at how the proteins are interacting with each other in like a three-dimensional sort of way, I think, right, like you said, you can find like different ways into the virus to kill it, I guess, eventually.
I'm amused because the quick blurb you sent this to me about this, Jorge,
mm-hmm.
it leaves out the word million or something. It says directing a $31 national project to map proteins.
Here's 30 bucks. Can you map?
Can you imagine getting
375 proteins?
Yeah. All right. Cool. James, let's take it to you for your first story of the week.
All right. My first story of the week is from the Burnham Institute in, I think that's in La Jolla, California. And what they have discovered is the benefits of rosemary, the spice that you put on your chicken. that it's actually really good for you, and it fights off free radical damage that's in your brain.
I think it's an herb.
Oh, yeah, it is an herb. Sorry,
it's
you're right,
right,
it is.
Okay.
But there's this active ingredient in rosemary. It's called, carnosic acid.
That's correct.
CA is how they abbreviate it. And it protects the brain from free radicals, which I guess they think contribute to like stroke and neurodegenerative conditions like Alzheimer's, and also just like the ill effects of normal aging on the brain. And what they say is that when you eat rosemary, I guess it just sits in your brain until it becomes activated by free radical damage, and then it leaps into action and protects the brain cells from these free radicals. And I kind of think of it like they're ninjas, you know, they're just sort of, you don't know that they're there, and then all of a sudden you need them, and then boom, the jump at these CA jumps into action and it protects the brain cells.
I wonder,
throwing ninja stars and everything else.
Yeah, however, well, but they're like good, like normal ninjas I think are pretty weird and scary. These are like kind of good.
No, there's got to be good ninjas too.
I wonder how long it sits. Like, you know, you can have some rosemary, say, on a Monday night. Is it going to help you out from ninja attacks for, say, like the next couple weeks?
I don't know. It doesn't give that sort of timeline. But they're saying what's cool about it is that I guess because this CA is natural, it only activates when it's needed. It's a much better way. That's how you'd want a drug to act, and they say it's sort of like a gentle tap as it goes into action, as opposed to like a sledgehammer when you take that some drugs produce. And so the other thing that I thought was interesting is that rosemary has been grown since the Middle Ages in the Alps and has become part of European folk medicine. And back then it was thought to help the nervous system and ward off sickness, and now the scientists are revisiting this, and they're like looking at the exact chemical pathways to figure out, you know, how it's beneficial.
Does it say how you have to take it?
Well, they say, you know, they don't really get into the actual details, but
just
the thing's titled Rosemary Chicken Protects Your Brain from Free Radicals, so.
Should be a clue right there.
Yeah.
All right.
Just as an aside, I like the term free radicals.
Yeah, I do too.
You know?
Yeah.
It sounds awesome, even though, like, free radicals aren't good.
No,
it sounds really cool.
You always hear it, you know, with commercials related to skin and products, and I'm always kind of interested by it.
I kind of feel that way too. Like, I'm like free radical. Like, that's, I like that. I like their thinking. I like the cut of their jib. You know, but then
yeah. Two words that are pretty good.
They seem like they seem really great.
Yeah, but then, you know, they got better. It's better that the CA, I guess, you know, the CA ninjas get after them.
James, you're into these sort of food stories.
I know. I love, you know,
honey,
eating is great.
Garlic. Didn't you do the garlic stuff?
Oh, there's like pumpkin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Jorge, let's take it back to you for your second story.
Okay, my next story comes out of the University of Manchester, where researchers are working on high-tech battery-powered textile yarns that would make, you know, our clothes glow in the dark. And I guess...
it's about time.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there's stuff like this that's been around. And what they're saying is that they're what they call electroluminescent yarn. Is more flexible than the stuff that's around. It acts more like conventional yarn, you know, that you might have in your sweater that you're wearing right now. Whereas, like, current optical fibers that provide illumination tend to be kind of hard and not, you know, not something that you could wear easily. But they're saying that this kind of stuff is, you know, is yarn that could be incorporated in clothing that, you know, you might see like a cyclist or a jogger wear, or even like someone who's, you know, like a highway maintenance worker. And the stuff that is available right now, if you were going on a night jog, is like reflectant stuff. So you would need, you know, you need an exterior light to make it visible. So a car's headlight coming at you, which at that point might be too late, quite honestly. So the researchers say that this yarn is consisted of two different kinds of conductors, and there's an interconductive core yarn, which is coated with an electroluminescent ink, and that emits a light when an electric current is passed through it. And then there's like an outer protective transparent, like a yarn wrapped around it. And when it's powered by a battery, and they don't get into what kind of a battery you would need. I mean, I'm wondering if you would need like a, you know, like a AA battery in your shirt, or if they could work in something that's a little more, you know, user friendly. But then once you have like the electrical field around these conductors, then it emits light. And they actually say that like when it can easily be incorporated in knitted and woven fabric, because the more you have like these two yarns like touching each other and knitted around, that the brighter the glow could be. So,
you know who's really going to benefit from this technology?
Ravers.
The lightning, the lightning bug Halloween costume industry.
And also ravers.
And ravers.
And ravers.
All right, James, let's hear your second story, right?
Second story out of University of Michigan. This is being published in the February 2008 issue of Personality and Social Psychology Bulletin.
Whoa.
And what these folks have discovered is that spending just 10 minutes talking to another person can help improve your memory and your performance on tests. So what they did is they did two different tests. They looked at a probability sample of 3,600 people between 24 and 96, gave them a mini mental exam, and then they did another test with 76 college students and did a bunch of different things with them. So I'm not going to get into the actual specifics of what the various tests were, but what the scientists say the findings suggest is that visiting with a friend or neighbor can be just as helpful as staying sharp as like doing a daily crossword puzzle. And they also say that it says that social isolation can have a negative effect on intellectual abilities as well as emotional well-being. So it's pretty interesting, I think, that, you know, basically chatting with somebody can keep your brain sharp.
It's good to shoot the breeze.
Yeah, there's actually something positive about that.
So it's not just polite to say, how's it going?
Right, like you should, if you haven't spoken to somebody, then go up to somebody and be like, talk about how your talking is making you both mentally sharp.
What if the person you're talking to is really annoying?
Or dumb.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess if it's just a one-way conversation, then I would imagine it. But you know what? When you're talking to somebody who's talking too much and you're just sitting there listening at them, then your brain is like thinking of about a million other things. So that's, you're probably getting as much mental exercise.
It's
like,
true.
That's a mental crossword right there.
Kind of like right now.
Yeah, that's
like the mental crossword where you can't get any of the crossword answers, but you're still thinking about it,
right,
but you're not getting anything right.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for that story.
Sure.
Jorge, let's take it back to you for your third and final story. Good luck.
Okay, my third and final story comes from out of NC State University, and it's published in the journal Genome Biology. And scientists there are looking at, you know, genetic clues as to how some people are more prone to alcoholism than others. And to find this, they're going through the trusty fruit fly. And what they did is they bred fruit flies. You know, you can go, fruit flies are so short-lived that you can, like, breed multiple generations, really, in no time. And so they bred these flies to be super lightweights or super lushes. And then they tested their genomes. And instead of actually, like, what they could have done is examine the gene changes after the exposure to alcohol and then the development of the fly's tolerance to it. But instead, they actually selected flies that had, you know, four alcohol sensitivities. So they created these lushes and these lightweights, and then they looked at how their whole genome changed as a result of being, you know, inebriated. And what they found is that that more than 1,500 genes of these flies changed in testing. And then out of tests of 35 especially promising candidate genes, they showed that 32 genes affected alcohol sensitivity. And out of these genes, out of these 32 genes, 72% of them are we have human counterparts. So by going through these genes and figuring out which ones affect, you know, how we react to alcohol, they can actually, their hope is that they could develop a drug eventually that that people who are more, you know, who might have more genetic predisposition to alcoholism in their family could take drugs really for alcohol.
Like, Jorge?
Yeah.
How did they get the fruit flies drunk?
That's an interesting question, James. They put them in this container where they really is just a tube filled with like an alcoholic gas essentially, and they pumped them, you know, they got them, you know, drunk off fumes.
Okay, so wait a minute. They have alcoholic gas.
Gas wasn't the right word. They called it vapors. So alcoholic vapors, and the flies would get inebriated by breathing these vapors. And the lightweight flies tended to need just about a minute or two of exposure to fall to the bottom of what they called this inebriometer. And the lushes actually could hold out for about what they called a bender of 18 minutes. I think the guys who did this study had like a good time coming up with different ways to do it.
I'd like to go to a fruit fly party.
It would be fun for about 18 minutes, and then everyone would be passed out.
Down at the bottom of the what?
Of the inebriometer.
The inebriometer.
Mm-hmm. I just think it's crazy that we have a lot of genes that we are similar to.
Yeah.
Fruit flies.
The fruit fly.
But yes, we do.
All right, James. Well, or rather, Jorge, thank you for that. And we'll take it back. James, you have one more story, right?
I do, yep. Okay, my last story comes from the Scripps Research Institute, and this work will be published in the, or was published in the July 29th issue of the journal Chemistry and Biology. And what they're looking at is a potential new type of vaccine to work against the drug-resistant bacterias and staph infections and all that you've been hearing about in the news lately. And this is pretty interesting, because normally I guess like the penicillins and methicillins and all that stuff, they kill the bug. But what this is looking to do is get in the way of the communication that the bacteria cells, the way that they communicate to each other in order to kind of get the uprising going and starting the infection. So the way that, I guess, these bacteria normally work is that they're kind of hanging out in your body, and but they don't do anything until they sense that there's enough of the other bacteria around them to do some damage, that they all rise up together, and then they start converting other cells into bacteria and harmful stuff, and then next thing you know, you got this full-on infection, and that's called quorum sensing. And what...
It's like a mob.
It is. What they do is... I guess they send out these small molecules that are called autoinducers, and when these other cells get these autoinducers, then like boom, you've got this infection. So it's kind of like say you're at a Guns N' Roses concert, and Axl Rose flips out and cancels the show, right? And like everyone's kind of angry, and you know, people are starting to leave or whatever, and there's like one troublemaker, and he starts flipping over a chair or something. Well, if he knows that there's enough other people there to really go nuts, then he'll go nuts, and then everybody's going nuts, and next thing you know, you have a full-on staph infection.
Is that really what it's like?
This is the way I see it in my head. All but right. What this does, what their vaccine does, is it basically doesn't let the troublemaker know that there's other troublemakers there, and so they stay in line, and therefore you don't get the big infection.
That's cool.
Isn't that cool?
I actually like your analogy.
Yeah. James is like, I'm going to start calling you like metaphor king.
He needs it to sort of wrap his mind around these things.
That's what, yeah.
He's good at it.
I think it's a good way to do things.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's everything I see usually has to do with Star Wars, Guns N' Roses.
We've noticed.
Yeah. And ninjas.
All right. So is that it?
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, then let me tell our listeners real quickly how to vote for their favorite story of the week. Please email us at pod_cast@discovery.com. pod_cast@discovery.com. Or you can give us a call, leave us a message, tell us your favorite story of the week and why you're voting for it at 888-890-6339, 888-890-6339. And we really want to get those emails and calls, so please be in touch with us and tell us your favorite story. Guys, real quick before we go, let's recap the stories. Jorge, you're up.
My first story was Northwestern exposing the most deadly infectious diseases in 3D. My second story was high-tech textiles that paved the way for glowing garments. And my last story was NC State looking at drunk fruit flies to help with human alcoholism.
All right.
My three stories were rosemary protects your brain from free radicals. Second story was 10 minutes of talking keeps your brain sharp. My third story is research that will keep bacteria from knowing that there's other bad bacteria around it and therefore doesn't flip out and make you sick.
Great. All right, listeners, so choose your favorite story and we'll reward James and Jorge accordingly.
You will?
Yeah.
What?
You'll win for the week. Just the glory.
That's the accordingly.
Yeah. And James, have a great time in San Diego.
I sure will.
All right. Jorge, have fun back in the news bunker.
I am, always.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks, see ya.
And that's Discovery News reporters James Williams and Jorge Ribas. They join us regularly on our Discovery News podcast. And, of course, you can watch their news videos at discoverynewsvideo.com. And for Discovery News, I'm Will Johnson.